again, going back to the expectations thing, it's really important to remember it is going to be messy, and it is maybe going to feel like it's quote unquote not worth it because it's messy, because it's slower, but just think about the skills that you're giving your kids for their lifetime, and just knowing, like, by the time they get to be a teenager, my 9-year-old can literally make breakfast for us in the morning, and it tastes just like what I would make, maybe a little bit messier, but like he can do that as a 9-year-old, and that's like the coolest thing to me.
Welcome back to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. Today we have Madison, and Madison is here to talk to us about realistic mealtimes for our family. So welcome to the podcast, Madison.
Thank you so much for having me, Carly.
So can you tell me a little bit about how this became your thing?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like every time someone asks me that, I'm like, let's see, how long do we have? Because it has been a journey. But so like you said, my name is Madison. I am the founder and CEO behind Cook at Home Mom. And over there, we share healthy, approachable recipes for busy families. And how that journey started for me is, I guess back in childhood even, which I won't go too far into that, but basically I did not grow up with a love of cooking. I was very picky growing up. And then all of a sudden, flash forward to being in college and living in a dorm room where I had a kitchen, all of a sudden it was like, I have this kitchen that I can cook, but I don't know how to cook. Like, I know how to make like a frozen pizza or some mac and cheese, but I don't know much more than that. And then when my husband and I got married a couple years later, then all of a sudden there were two of us to feed. And I, at the same time, was in a very warehouse style corporate job that did not fulfill anything for me, really. And when I came home, I found myself really being drawn to the kitchen and drawn to making something for dinner. I was no longer looking for that frozen pizza quick win. I was looking for something where I felt like I was truly making something with my hands. And from there, that's really where like my love of cooking came from. And then just over the years, I have just heard from so many friends, other moms, people like that, that just struggle with cooking in general, let alone it being something that they actually enjoy. And so it's just turned into a passion of mine to be able to share quick and easy healthy meals for families. I have 3 boys of my own who are 9, 7, and almost 3. And so I am in the thick of it right there with you guys. And even being someone who loves cooking, dinner time still can feel like a stressful time of day. And so my hope is that with a couple more tools in our tool belt that we can make dinner time not so stressful and something that actually brings our family together and doesn't isolate mom and just become this like super stressful moment for mom.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like dinner time is, for some reason, the biggest stressors happen at the same time. Everybody is either tired, or if they just woke up from a nap, they're like full of energy, but mom is tired. And then we're also, it's supposed to be the meal that we put a little extra effort into. And all of those things are happening at the same time. Sometimes you're either by yourself with the kids all the time, or their other parents not home yet. And so it's just this like time of day where you're like, I have this picture in my mind of almost like that Norman Rockwell moment of we're all sitting around this nice hot meal that's ready all at the same time. And in reality, our kitchens at 4:30, 5 p.m. look absolutely nothing like that. And so when that happens over and over, it can be easy to just be like, forget it. Like, it just doesn't work for us. So for someone who's in that, where they're like brand new mom trying to come up with like, how do I actually get food on the table? Maybe there's someone who was able to get food on the table when it was just them. And now that they've added kids into the mix, that time of day looks nothing like it used to. What are some of your ways to make that time of day something that they can actually feel like their family is gathering around a meal while being realistic about the season of life they're in?
Exactly. Yeah, it is a season for sure. But I think it really comes down to having a plan. And I say that as someone who is like not a type A type of person. I'm very type B. I can go with the flow and all the things. But at the same time, when it comes to dinner, if you are opening your fridge at 5:30, what am I going to make today? It's not going to end well. Someone recently said something to me that was essentially like, if it's not planned ahead of time, we all will make the wrong choices. You could define wrong as whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be anything specific. But I think the point is, if it's not planned ahead of time and there isn't something ready to even just start on at that 5:30 hour, it's probably not going to look the way that you want it to. And so I really highly recommend that people get into some sort of a routine with meal planning. It doesn't have to be every single meal is planned and, you know, you have this like grandiose plan for the week. It could be just simply starting with, I'm going to look at our calendar and look at where our busy nights are, and I'm going to make a plan for that night. It could be that simple, but just practicing that, and I always call it a muscle that you're building, like building that muscle is really what's going to help it start to transition from this like chaotic, crazy moment to something where you're like, okay, I've got this. We can handle this. Yes, the baby's crying. Yes, someone didn't nap, whatever the situation is, but I know I have a plan and I know I have something simple that we're going to make tonight. And so it's going to be okay.
I think in those seasons where you have toddler, baby, all of those things, I think one of the things we experience in more ways than just meal planning is decision fatigue, where we're like, I have to make another decision about another thing. And like you said, the worst thing we can do is leave that decision for 5:05 p.m. when we're like, if that's the first time that we're thinking about that dinner, we're already too late. And so I have found, even though I'm similar to you, like in most ways, I'm very type B. I don't want a strict plan, a strict schedule. But when it comes to my meals, if I can sit down at some point, typically for me on the weekend, and just map out like 5 or 6 dinners that I can have on hand. I don't even like to assign a dinner to a day, because if I get to that day and I'm like, I don't feel like making that or whatever, then I feel like I am off plan or I'm doing the wrong thing. But if I just make a list of things that I know I have the ingredients for, they're things that we like to eat, then when that 5 o'clock rolls around and I tune in to dinner, then it's, oh yeah, here's my list of meals. I keep the list on my phone. These, I know the meats are in the fridge. I know that the other ingredients are there. And it just reduces how many decisions you have to make at a stressful time of day. So what should meal planning look like for someone who doesn't currently meal plan?
Sure. I sit down once a week and I'm looking ahead and I'm planning, and I will kind of plan if there's like a special breakfast I want to make or a special snack, whatever. But like I said, I'm really only planning dinners because I know the rest of it is very flexible. But I will get to like day 5 of planning and all of a sudden I'm like, ugh, I don't want to make anything else. Like, I'm just done. And so it's funny that you said 5 days, because I feel like I've stretched myself now to doing 7 because I got frustrated with having to run to the store midweek and buy something else. But I would say typically I can like stick to the plan for about 5 days and then I will get a little bit creative or I'll change it up. But we typically have some extra meat in the freezer, or I will buy something like an extra pound of ground beef or something that I know I can just throw something together easily. But typically if it's like actual recipe, something that's a little bit more complicated than just like a taco bowl, then I'm going to make sure that I plan out at least 5 of those meals. But like I said, for somebody who's maybe has not planned their meals out before, like start with just 1 or 2 and just see how much like easier and stress-free those nights become. And then you can even take it a step further than that and start thinking ahead on, okay, if my day is going to be crazy busy, like when can I go ahead and prep certain parts of this meal? Maybe it's chopping the veggies ahead of time. Maybe it's making like a spice mixture ahead of time. There's so many different things you can do to prep ahead that are not necessarily throwing it in the crock pot and getting it started, but it's just like taking 1 or 2 steps out of what's needed. So that way it's a little bit simpler for you at mealtime and you can juggle a couple more things while mealtime's happening because you've already started.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's from the lazy genius, Kendra Adachi, of what can I do while I'm already here? So if I'm in the kitchen making breakfast for the kids, is there something like, can I put the chicken in a bag with some marinade and just put it back in the fridge while I'm already in the kitchen to make a different time of day a little bit more easy, a little bit less tasks at that time if I did even one little thing ahead of time?
So, I always, if my cutting board is out, I'm literally like, what can I chop? Can I chop some veggies so that my kids have a snack? Because I found if they're just chopped veggies, my kids will actually go for those over fruit because it's like convenient. I like that you said the marinade thing, and I kind of just want to add like one extra bonus tip to that. And that is, if you're doing that, can you double that recipe and put one in the freezer? Because that's another way that you can just start to stock up and start to make those meals easier so that when you do have a night where 5:30 rolls around and you're like, oh, I did not plan for this, you already have something that's maybe a fully cooked meal in the fridge or in the freezer, or you have a marinade that will thaw super quickly and then you can just cook it in the skillet. So you can save those emergency dinner situations and not have to just be like, we're going to go get takeout or we're going to go eat cereal for dinner or whatever it is.
Yeah, you just give yourself options, because I don't know when that's going to happen or what's going to be the specific thing that is stressing me out, but I know that it is going to happen, right? 100%. All of those kind of nights are inevitable. So one thing I want to focus in on is making mealtime be something that the whole family participates in. And it's not just one person standing in the kitchen making everything, and then everybody like grabs their plates and goes to different parts of the house or whatever, or sits down and eats at different times. I'm a huge advocate of the family sits down and eats together. I think it's such a like bonding and thing that people have good memories on from their childhood. So for our listeners, how can they start to make that mealtime be more of a family affair where it doesn't just feel like mom is the one standing over the stove making stuff and it's miserable for her and everybody else is having fun?
Sure. Yeah, I think there's two parts to that, really. I think the first is really setting up that family culture of like, we sit down at the dinner table and we eat together. And something that I know I experienced when my older two were a little bit younger is I would get really frustrated when we'd sit down for dinner and they would be like bringing their book or bringing their Legos or bringing their cars to the table. And all of a sudden it felt like, what's the point of us even eating together when my kids aren't even paying attention? Mm-hmm. But I had a really big perspective shift because I realized that it was better to have my kids at the table eating with us than to have a fight over, don't bring your Lego, don't bring your car. And then it's just like the dinner time is like soured. So I would say, especially for those younger mamas, like, is there a way that you can maybe allow some of that flexibility? And I'm not necessarily saying let your kids be on their iPad or let them be like in another room. There's nights that might happen and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But in general, if you can say like, what's the best case scenario here? Is it that like we're all at the table and we're all happy and maybe my kid is playing with a Lego instead of eating or something? Or is it that we just fight constantly over like it needing to look the way that I want it to look? And so I say that because that is something that I really struggled with for a while. And my husband and I had multiple conversations around, if we want us to enjoy the time together at the table, maybe it just needs to look different than what we're thinking. So that's the first thing, is just start working on creating that routine. And most often, I think we need to like, I remember growing up, I don't know if your family did this, but we would have like family meetings like once a week where we would go over things, or we might go over like the budget for the week or just like what's coming up and all of that. And so sometimes I will do a very casual family meeting where it's okay, we're all going to sit down and we're going to talk about this. And mom's going to say like, all right, I want to start a new habit of us all sitting down at the table together for dinner. And in order for that to happen, I need XYZ, whatever it is to happen. Maybe it's that you need dad to like help with the kids for 30 minutes while you finalize dinner. Or maybe it is that you want like everyone to be involved in the dinner preparation. But I think oftentimes we have these things in our head that we're like, this is how I want it to look and I want it to be this way. And I just want my family to just know that. And so having that conversation and like setting the tone for that, I think can be a really great first start. Before I jump into like how to get kids actually involved in the kitchen, does that resonate with you? Does that feel like something that you can relate to as well?
Yeah, for sure. My kids are very similar ages. So my boys are 10, 8, 6, and then my daughter is 4. So very similar. And I remember I think it was like a child psychologist or something. Somebody once said that don't expect the kids to sit longer than the number of minutes of their age. Of it's similar to what you said of like those unrealistic expectations that if I'm like, oh, at 4 years old, you should be able to sit for 30 minutes with no toys and eat everything on your plate. Sometimes we say it goes bad. Like we're like, oh, it's such a disaster. But the disaster is actually our unrealistic expectations, not that the child is very appropriately being a four-year-old or something. And so I remember thinking like, wow, that's a lot shorter than the pressure I was putting on them to sit until we're all finished or something like that. So realizing, hey, if my four-year-old sits still in front of her plate for 4 minutes, like we're on track with what we can expect to see from that. I think that is, it helps to release myself from being unrealistic about mom's going to sit down and this is exactly what it's going to look like. Like you said, letting go of if there's a Lego at the table, is that really the hill I want to die on? Or am I just going to be grateful that everybody's sitting around the table? That's definitely something that I know I've experienced and had to get past a little bit of, it's not always going to look the same, or inevitably someone has to get up and go get their water bottle 30 seconds after we sat down or something. So not being a stickler on those kinds of things can actually lead to making the way for noticing like that was a meal time that went well, or we did sit around the table for 10 or 15 minutes. I definitely see a difference when I see a difference positively in how it goes, the lower the expectations I have for making it look some sort of way.
Yeah. And I think there's, it's a balanced, it's like a double-edged sword in a way, because it is okay, I think, as a mom to be like wanting appreciation for the hard work that you did in the kitchen. And I know that's something that my husband has done a great job of modeling, is every single night when we sit down, he always says thank you, like audibly to me, so my kids can hear it. But I think if that's not something that is like happening in your household, again, I think that's okay to maybe take your spouse aside and say, hey, like, I would really love to teach our kids to be appreciative of someone who makes dinner for them. Could you start by just, and I know it's going to feel awkward because you're like, please recognize me, right? But can you set the tone for this with our family? And again, all that is just like sharing something that is important to you. And it's a life lesson that you want your kids to learn over time. And it feels a lot less awkward than being like, say thank you for dinner to mommy. But yeah, I think just like you said, letting go of those expectations a little bit and recognizing like the little wins that are happening along the way. I also just caution parents too from maybe setting bad habits like early on. I know it's very tempting when your kids are very little to just be like, I'm just going to put them in their high chair and let them eat, and then mom's going to eat later. And yes, that can happen every once in a while, but it is a very like quick habit that your toddler will develop. And we have one of those little, they're like the stools, that the kitchen helper stools for my almost 3-year-old. And like he'll most of the time for breakfast, he'll eat breakfast there at the counter. He'll just eat on his stool and it's great. But we had to like really carefully be like, that is only for breakfast. That's not for dinner, and set that expectation. So I guess I say that to say, yes, there are seasons where maybe things are hard. I know like when my husband's not home for dinner for whatever reason, sometimes we're like in different rooms, or I let the rules slide a little bit, but I just have to be really careful of that, because I want my kids to understand, like, as a family, we sit down for dinner and this is what we do regardless of who's home, what's going on, whether we're eating at 4:30 to get soccer practice or we're eating after a party or something, it's always going to kind of look the same. And that's something that kids need too. Like, they need that security of this is the way that we do things as a family, and just setting those expectations along the way.
Yeah. And I think if you can anchor your family around a routine, and then as if it's something that happens 80% of the time, then occasionally having an offbeat night is not going to throw away the whole routine. And just letting it be something that, if they know that most of the time this is what it looks like, and every once in a while it looks different. Like, I know my kids like cheer if I say, especially like on a Friday night or something where we're having frozen pizza, and I'm like, okay, we're gonna eat this on the living room floor with a movie or something. Having the ability to switch up the routine every once in a while is also a powerful thing, but it's only a fun thing if it's because it's switching up what they normally do. So you have to normally do the routine, the regular thing, something. Yeah. So I like both. I like calling it more of a rhythm than a routine, because I just feel like it gives a little bit more of, it's a basic framework that they know to expect. Because I think it does, there's so much positive research around kids who experience a family dinner at a table, especially with TV and iPad off and stuff, like having that as an anchor of their life of like, no matter how their day went, we're all going to sit and look at each other and ask how our day went and see each other around the table, no matter how many different directions we went in during the day. I think that is so important, not just for the nutrition food aspect of it, but also for the relational aspect of the family. So on that note, how can we involve kids at different ages in this process, bringing them into, you know, when you said having them model the idea of telling you thank you for cooking the meal, one thing I thought of was if the kids participate in the process, then there's also something that I can model to them of thank you for setting the silverware, or thank you for getting everybody's water cups or something. So what are some ways that you've found to bring them into the process so that they don't just show up when the food is ready and sit down and have everything done for them?
Yeah, I actually love this concept so much. And it's one of those things I think I didn't realize I was doing from such a young age with my kids. I have always been home with my kids. I work at home as well. But from like the time my oldest was born, I feel like he was either like on my chest, like being baby worn while I was cooking, or then by the time he was standing, he was like standing next to me. And one of the things I quickly realized is that giving them like fake jobs to do was like not going to cut it. My kids were too smart for that. And they were just like, wait a minute. No, I want to make the actual thing you're making. Mm-hmm. When they're super little, I would give them just like a little bit of flour and some oats and some water to just play with or whatever. But then as they got older, like probably two or older, then they were like, no, I want to do the real thing. So there's a couple of things that can be really helpful. I mentioned that like kitchen stool thing. That's super helpful if you have little kids because they want to be up in what you're doing. They want to be able to see and you want them to be able to be safe in doing that. We used to just have a regular stool and it was not cutting it. So then we got the kitchen helper stool and that helped a lot. But I also bought like the little toddler knives, like the toddler safe knives for them to be able to actually cut vegetables with me. And I mentioned I have 7 and 9 year olds, and by the time they were probably like 5 and 7, they were able to use like a real knife to cut like peppers or cucumbers or whatever. And I think it did multiple things. One was that it gave them so much confidence to be able to help with things that were real jobs that needed to be done. But it also allowed me, now that they're a little bit older, to be like, hey, can you go start the rice while I start the chicken? Or can you chop this vegetable for me while I do this? And so that has helped me to be able to be less stressed out in the kitchen. One, because I'm used to them being around and helping me. I'm not like, it's not like the very first time that they're helping me is like in the heat of the dinner time moment. But that has helped me to be able to take a little bit of the pressure off of myself. So I think starting with like age appropriate tasks when they're at whatever age they're at, there are things that will be appropriate for them to do. It could be simple things like stirring the rice or mixing up a seasoning. Again, going back to the expectations thing, it's really important to remember it is going to be messy and it is maybe going to feel like it's quote unquote not worth it because it's messy, because it's slower. But just think about the skills that you're giving your kids for their lifetime and just knowing like by the time they get to be a teenager, my 9-year-old can literally make breakfast for us in the morning and it tastes just like what I would make. Maybe a little bit messier, but like he can do that as a 9-year-old. And that's like the coolest thing to me. And I didn't set out when he was 1 year old to be like, when he's 9 years old, he's going to make breakfast. But it just happened over time. He's also my least interested in the kitchen stuff. So I say that not to say he's some pro chef or anything, but even being like not super interested in being in the kitchen with me, like he still has those skills. And then part two of that is what you were saying with getting everyone to help with setting the table. And it can be like, getting the toddler to go take the napkins to the table or the silverware, getting the older kids to fill the water cups or just even collect the water bottles if you guys just do water bottles at home. Mm-hmm. I always have this joke where if you've ever seen the show Bear, that's like the cooking show, they always say hands whenever they have a plate ready. So when dinner's ready, that's literally what I say. I'm like, hands, and everybody flocks to the kitchen and like grabs a bowl and takes it to the table. But something we've done along the way too with that, like from a culture, like a family culture perspective, is I will say, hey, Grayson's my oldest, grab Camden's bowl. Like I make them grab each other's so they're serving each other in that process. And so that it doesn't become this individualistic, just like I'm fending for myself type of thing. And so there's little things like that that you can just weave into what you're already doing instead of, and you have to pause though to not do it all yourself. And that's, I think, one of the hardest things, especially in those chaotic dinner moments, is you have to go slow enough that you recognize I can get my kids to help with this. And again, just know like it's going to be messy, but that's okay. That's part of the beauty of motherhood. And I think we all have learned that in so many different ways. So yeah, don't be afraid to incorporate your kids in the process of making the food because they're going to appreciate it much more. And then also just get them involved in the everyday parts of eating. Maybe it's clearing the table afterwards. And then when they get old enough, they can load the dishwasher and unload the dishwasher and things like that.
Yeah, I am a huge fan of that. Like, it's $8 or $9 that pack of kids knives that are, I think everybody has the same ones, but I have, once I got those and it was like, even if there might not necessarily be something in this specific dinner that I need chopped or whatever, if they walk past the kitchen while I'm making dinner, if I say, hey, we bought 2 pounds of strawberries today, I want you to sit at the table with a cutting board and one of the kid knives and cut all the tops off of the strawberries or whatever, even if the task itself is not related to the dinner, if they get into the routine of around dinner time, it's a family affair to be in the kitchen and prepping this meal together. There's also just like sweet conversations that come up as they're standing at the counter. If it's a school day and you can ask, I feel like while their hands are busy, they're more open to talking about things too. So just especially giving them boys. Things. Yes, especially boys. They're not going to sit, look you in the eyes and unload their whole day, But if they're chopping up at the strawberries or the carrots or whatever, and you just throw out like a, what'd you do in gym today? They might be a little more chatty. So I have found that too. It doesn't have to be something that we're going to eat this food for this meal. But if they're here and want to do something, find something. Because I want to, if you, especially any opportunity where they are willing and interested, like I want to take advantage of that to positively reinforce, yes, I do need your help. I do need you to do something for me, because that makes them more likely to come back and do it again. So that it's not this, I feel like if we treat it as something that's really occasional and like a big deal, then it's more likely to get the, oh, mom, mm-hmm. kind of reaction. If they're not used to it, if they're not typically in the kitchen, or if they're not typically setting the table, the first couple times you do it, especially if you have a little bit older kids, like those middle elementary kind of age, if they're completely unfamiliar with the kitchen and the concept of helping in the kitchen, you're going to get some resistance at first. But that's, again, just like the 4-year-old who only has a 4-minute age span or attention span, that's totally normal. And just bringing them into those little things, like it does eventually become something that they are used to, no matter what age you start at. So maybe on the flip side, we've referenced newer moms. On the flip side, if a mom is listening thinking like, okay, she just said her 9-year-old makes breakfast, my 9-year-old's never done anything in the kitchen, 9 is not too late at all. Start right now, and there are absolutely things that they can start to be involved in. And some of them, like you said, is some of them are going to be like they just do what you ask them to do because it's part of participating in the household. But you might have other kids who genuinely discover a love for being in the kitchen, baking, cooking, those kind of things, because you ask them to be involved in the meals.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's literally just like asking yourself, like, do I have to do this, or can my mm-hmm. son do this, or whatever you have. The other day I was making a dessert and I had to go, and I was like, oh, I have to make the topping for this. And I'm like, I'm just going to print it out. And I even asked my husband, I'm like, do you want to do this, or do you want to supervise our oldest doing this? He was like, he could do it, it's fine. And mm-hmm. so he made the topping for the dessert, and it like, mm-hmm. it was perfect. I also think one other thing about getting kids involved that I didn't mention was, if I circle back to the meal planning idea, if you can incorporate your kids into that process, now I will be 100% honest with you. The first time you ask them, like, what do you want to have for dinner? They're going to say pizza, hot dogs, pizza, burgers. Like, they're going to say whatever the favorite thing is.
Yeah.
When you can say yes to that, let them be involved and let them have like ownership in that. Something that we've done that's been really powerful for us is we actually have a family meals, like a family favorite meals document that we can pull up, and then my kids can read through it and be like, oh yeah, I love that meal, and they'll pick that. But again, sometimes it's like, you want pizza and we haven't had pizza in a while. Great, we'll have pizza. Yep. But I think just giving them that control, because that's really what it is, it's mm-hmm. buy-in for them to be mm-hmm. like, I got to do something this week. And my family, yeah. like my mom listened to me when I said mm-hmm. I wanted to have whatever it is. So I think that's another powerful thing to do. And the more you do that, the more you're going to get ideas that are not pizza and hot dogs and all of yeah. that, like kid food. But that mm-hmm. can be another really great way for them to just start to understand that it's not just mom who's in charge of this, but it's a family mm-hmm. affair to get yeah. people to the table, to eat together as a family, and to make yeah. decisions as a family too. So I think mm-hmm. that's another powerful element.
Yeah, my oldest is by far my pickiest. And one thing I learned from the Kids Eat in Color Instagram account was that you think of it the opposite way of, oh, a picky eater is not going to be involved in like the meal planning and the kitchen and whatever. And she actually really stresses one of the most powerful ways to help kids overcome their picky eating is to involve them in the process before they just sit down in front of a fully prepped meal that they're totally unfamiliar with, that they haven't seen before. And so I've had to do that with, like, I was getting so frustrated with making thing after thing that I thought he would like, and then he wouldn't touch it. And so instead of just only involving him at the very end of the process, instead asking him like, okay, as I'm meal planning, I tried to give a little bit of structure around it. What kind of pasta meal will you eat this week? Does chicken bacon ranch pasta sound good? Or does spaghetti sound good or whatever? And then, like you said, if they have a little bit of control or a little bit of skin in the game in the process mm-hmm. ahead of time, I have found that to really help that picky eating too. He's better now. He's still my pickiest, even though he's 10. But when he was really little and would barely touch 5 different foods kind of thing, one of the things that really lifted the weight off of my shoulders was that she was like, chopping a pepper, even if they never eat it, like that's exposure because they are feeling what the pepper feels like. They're smelling it. They're looking at it, like all of those things. So just getting those pickier kids, instead of being like, oh, they're not going to be the one that likes to be in the kitchen, actually focusing on pulling them into the kitchen more, I have found like that really expanded some of the things he was willing to try. Or it's just lower stakes for a picky kid sitting in front of a meal that they haven't seen before. That's high pressure, high stress. They're probably not going to eat it. But if like I have found times where if he was just prepping something with me that he would be like, oh, what is that? I'd be like, oh, it's hummus. And maybe he's never going to eat it at dinner. But if I say, oh, just dip your pinky in it and taste it just to see what it tastes like, that he might do that, even if he's never going to take a big scoop of hummus with his carrot or whatever. So that's another thing that I'll just toss out as a fellow mom of a highly picky eater. Don't assume that picky eater is going to not be involved. Actually try to actively pull them more heavily into the process.
And I think that shows too, like how big of a process it is, right? Like mm-hmm. It really isn't just about the moment where you sit down and eat the food, but it's all of the stuff ahead of time. Even like you were saying, exposure, like them going to the grocery store with you. Mm-hmm. For those who actually go to the grocery store, I don't usually go into a grocery store. Show them like, this is how you pick a bell pepper, and look at, there's four different colors of bell peppers. Which one should we try this week? Again, they may never eat it, but that's okay. They got to be a part of it and got to have some say. And yes, I totally agree that level of exposure and just slowly doing that over time is what is going to make them, they might not ever like that food, but they might be more willing to try something that you give them in the future.
Yeah, for sure. And I think also it's like realizing that the picky eating too is sometimes very fear-based, even if we don't realize it. So having a time where like, I know for him when he was kind of like 5, 6, me putting like slices of bell pepper on his plate, he was like, oh my gosh, am I going to have to eat this or whatever it is. So having an interaction with that food where there is no, if his job is to chop the pepper, then there's no pressure to eat it in that moment. Then he can be like, okay, I can take the kid knife and slice the pepper. And then that is just like a less pressure, less fearful interaction with the food to get over some of those fears that are associated with it.
Exactly. So one other thing that I found to be really helpful in exposing kids to new foods or just getting them involved is actually what does happen at the dinner table. And I've found that my kids absolutely love any meal where they have to put their own toppings on it. Mm-hmm. So like a couple of examples, I mentioned taco bowls earlier. I feel like I always reference that because it's just so easy. But if you have like a taco situation and they can put their own like cilantro and salsa and onions or whatever toppings your kids like, they're might be more likely to sprinkle a little bit of something new on there because they're getting to do it themselves. And again, they're getting that control. We love doing Greek chicken meatballs. And that's actually another fun one that like a lot of the family can get involved in, because maybe you're making hummus and maybe you're making pita and you're chopping vegetables for a cucumber salad. And so there's all these different components that come together. But again, like the kids and everyone in the family gets to make their own version of that. And so I found those meals to be like really interactive as a family, which is really fun. You always have more dishes because you have those little bowls like for all the toppings. But again, like it's just, that's a fun thing to do. Now, I don't do those types of meals every single night, but I just, and I don't even necessarily consciously say like, this, I'm going to do a fun hands-on meal. But if you can incorporate those every once in a while, that's another way to just expose kids to different things, maybe get them willing to try something new. And it's just more fun for everybody. So I love those kind of meals.
Yeah. And then you don't have to, I have found myself, because I have picky eaters with very different preferences, I found myself really shying away from the dinner that's like a casserole platter where it really can only be served in one way. Like you can't take anything out of it. You can't really add anything to it. So instead having it be something that's assemble your own plate, and mom and dad can make it this giant taco salad, and the kids can have a tortilla shell with two things on the shell or whatever it is. And you're not a short order cook. Cooking multiple things for everybody's different preferences, like making a meal that's more of a unstructured, like these are the components, but you can make it as complicated or as simple as you want, can not only cut down on how much time you spend in the kitchen, but can also cut down on how much food you might waste from trying to cook all these separate things.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think that is, again, just one of those ways that you model for your family. Like, we eat the same thing. There have been countless times, my middle is the one, excuse me, who struggles with just preferences with food. And there have been many times where we've served something where he's just, I'm not eating that. And I'm like, okay, that's your choice. I'm not going to force you to eat it. You're also not going to go make your own thing most of the time. This is just what we're eating. And again, I'm not going to pick those meals that I know he's not going to like multiple times a week. I might space them out, or I might think of what's a way I could serve this in a deconstructed way so that he can make it something he likes. And yeah, that has helped a lot, because moms do enough already. So we don't need to be making like five meals at dinner time for everybody's preferences. So if you can think of like, how can I serve this in a way that everybody can have a version that they like? And you might be surprised. If you serve the taco salad idea, your kids might say, I actually do want to try this on lettuce. And great, like they get to be exposed to something new. Doesn't mean they're going to want taco salad every single day, but they got the chance to try something new. And I think that also gives the aspect, or like, I don't know if your kids are like this, but my kids just go crazy whenever we say we're going out to eat, which is very rare. So it's probably why they're so excited about it. But I think if you serve something like that does have that interactive component, it's almost like the same idea or feeling for them is like getting to go to a restaurant and ordering what they want off the menu without having to go and spend $80 on a family of five. That actually would be a cheap dinner, I think. I think it'd be more like $100 or more. You don't have to go and do that just to get that same experience.
Yeah. I know for a short time when my boys were like, I don't know, like 3, 1.5 and newborn or something, like really little, that I was that short order cook. And I eventually got to a point where I was just like, this is not sustainable. And this is not helping anyone. It's not helping me. It's not helping them either. Like, I think as hard as it can be to have those picky eaters who we pour into a meal and then they say, I'm not going to eat that, or I don't want that, it can be so frustrating that we're just like, forget it. I'll just do something different. The worst thing we can do for a picky eater is to stop exposing them to things that they don't like. So instead, just having that, I always say I have a firm and neutral tone when they tell me that they don't like something. And I'm like, that is your choice. I also try to have something on the table that they will eat. So maybe sometimes, like, my really picky eater, he loves carrots and hummus, but he might not touch the whatever the main is. If he has one meal in his life where the only thing he eats is carrots and hummus, nothing bad is going to happen to him. Like, he's going to be totally fine. And so just giving those, like, those boundary setting and that routine of, if you don't like something, you don't have to eat it. But like you said, you also don't get this totally separate meal, because that just reinforces every time you feel a little bit hesitant about something, you get this totally separate dinner. That's just going to perpetuate and make it harder and harder to then ever grow past that. So I have definitely found that even though it was hard in the short term to start saying we all eat the same things, in the long term, it's been so much better for our budget, my sanity, the dishes, his food preferences, all of those things, to have a little bit of a boundary of, this is the meal, this is what we're having, and it's okay if you don't like it, but it also doesn't mean that we're going to go make this separate thing all the time. So on a similar note to that, with cooking all of these things and having maybe going to the grocery store and not having a great meal plan behind us, and we're just haphazardly grabbing things that we think we might be able to make a meal out of, which inevitably leads to a lot of food waste and a lot of things that, where we have these random ingredients that we don't know what to do with. Do you have any tips or ideas for how to be more efficient and effective with what we're actually buying so that we make sure that it's stuff that we will use and stuff that we will eat?
Yeah, so I actually did a little bit of just light research on just what the average family spends, not necessarily on groceries, but everything around that. And I was really surprised to see that the average family throws away about $1,500 a year in just food waste alone. So that's $125 a month on wasted food, which, depending on your family, $125 a month is like almost an entire week of groceries for a lot of families, or at the very least, it might be like an extra Costco run or something. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot of potentially wasted food. And I really think that comes down to not having that plan, because if you are just buying stuff as a one-off and you're not really thinking ahead to, when am I, like, lettuce is a perfect example. Any tart greens, lettuce, spinach, whatever, they always go bad so fast. And so it's, if you're gonna buy that, you need to make sure maybe you have a meal that uses it on Monday and a meal that uses it on Thursday or Friday, because it's not lasting longer than that. Yeah. There's lots of like food preservation and hacks and things like that you can do to like make your produce last longer. But even so, at the end of the day, like, it's only going to last so long. And yeah. So that meal plan can really come in handy. And it's not, you can't always buy things like in bulk. You can buy 3 carrots if you need 3 carrots, but you can't buy, I don't know, like a cup of lettuce, right? Like it's things come in certain sizes. And so you have to work with what you have available. Beyond that meal plan idea, I think even the first step before that is just taking inventory of what you have. And when I say inventory, I don't mean you literally have to write it all down. Although there are like printables that you can get for things like that, which can be really helpful if that works for your brain. For me, that does not work because it's just so much work to write it all down that I'm like, yeah, it's going to change by next week anyway. But I will always start by just looking at my fridge or my freezer and saying, what do I have available? If I have some frozen meat that I can make use of, even just one time a week, that's going to help me to cut down my budget for the week because I don't have to buy at least one set of protein, which just protein for one meal alone is like $12 to $15, depending on what it is. So that alone is going to cut into that budget. Mm-hmm. And then looking at things like spices or produce and things like that, it's tempting to make something new. But mm-hmm. like one example, a recipe that we love to make is butter chicken. It's like an mm-hmm. Indian chicken dish and it's delicious, but it uses garam masala. And if you don't cook with that spice a lot, it's like you're going to buy it and probably not use it again. And it's going to expire by the time you get to use it. So little things like that, like if you are just being hyper aware of what is included in these recipes that you're picking, or how can I make sure I'm using this spice blend again later in the week? And then especially doing that with the produce is really key. And I feel like just that mindfulness alone, not even any like crazy strategies or hacks involved, like you are definitely going to cut down on that food waste. And even if you're like, quote unquote, only wasting like $70 a month, mm-hmm. like that's still half of the national average.
Yep.
And that's still going to make a huge impact on like your budget. And then what's going to happen yep. over time, you're going to build that muscle and you're going to get better and better at doing it and find that you're wasting less and less food just by being conscious of it.
Yeah. And it also, if someone struggles with, okay, the idea of meal planning is that I sit down at a blank piece of paper and I have to pull 7 ideas out of thin air of things to make. If you start by looking in your fridge, freezer, and pantry, you're going to get a few ideas of, oh, I have a pack of chicken thighs in the freezer. What could I make with those? Which is just an easier question to answer than what are my 7 meals going to be for this week? And if you do it, if you don't first start by looking at what you already have, then like you said, you almost double up on, you would buy a protein for a random dinner that you came up with on your meal plan when you had a perfectly fine protein in the freezer already. So I think starting with what I already have, and I'm the same way as you, I do not like write down an inventory or something, but when I go to meal plan, I'll just open my fridge and freezer and then open the pantry and just get a visual on what's here that I can add into the meal plan so that it doesn't go to waste. And then it also, anytime you reduce your waste, you also reduce what you spend. And I think what it also does for me is it helps me, it trains me that I can be creative with the meals that we put together so that, for example, if I grocery shop every Saturday and we get to Friday and it feels like slim pickings or there's not a lot there, if you don't have that trained muscle of I can come up with a meal, your inclination is going to be like, I got to run to the grocery store and buy the stuff for a dinner. But if you've taught yourself like, okay, there's probably something here that I can piece together and come up with a meal for the family. Like last night is a perfect example for me. I forgot to pull my chicken out of the freezer, didn't remember it until 5 o'clock. Instead of going to the grocery store or jumping to takeout, I did homemade biscuits, scrambled eggs, and chicken sausage from the freezer. Perfect. That's a full dinner. I had a fruit salad on the side and none of it was like on my meal plan. But because I've trained myself like, okay, if you have to go to a plan B, there's probably something here that can piece together a perfectly fine meal for the family. And the more you practice that, the better you just get at it. And then it becomes something that's not so overwhelming, but you have to just try it those first few times.
And yeah, looking at your fridge first, I can't tell you the amount of times I've been like, oh gosh, I have some chicken that I need to use like today. Yep. And like you were saying, then you can shift your meal plan and make it work. Or even just looking will help you be like, okay, there's chicken in here. I don't want to use chicken for a few days. I'm going to put it in the freezer so it doesn't go bad. So it's that little, and then eventually, yeah, you can get into like, all right, I have this vegetable or this fruit that's going bad and I'm going to freeze it instead. and learning how to do that over time. But you've said it a couple of times in different ways, but I just really want to reiterate that all of these things we're talking about, they are muscles that you have to build up. And there is nothing wrong with you if you're like, I literally can't do any of this. I don't know how to throw together a meal. I don't know how to meal prep. That is 100% okay. And you can start small. You do not have to start with these 5-course meals or anything like ridiculous. Like, you can start with very simple meals that feel achievable to you, because the more you do that, the more you're going to want to go back. And we talked about it with, like, within the context of kids and picky eating, but it works the same with cooking. Like, if every time you go to the kitchen to make dinner, you are feeling stressed and like the family's fighting and everybody's like losing it by the time you sit down, it's like you are never going to feel like that's worth it. And so just taking like baby steps along the way, same thing with the concept of budgeting, right? If you just like start overnight and say, I can't spend any money, like budgeting is not going to feel fun to you. But if you slowly work up to doing the things and reaching the goals that you want to reach, then it's going to be so much more sustainable. I think sustainable is such a good word for this practice of meal planning and cooking at home. It is not an overnight, like, I was not doing it and now I'm doing it perfectly. Like, it is a journey. And the more you do it, the more you're going to find that it's becoming easier and easier.
Yeah, for sure. I think that is a perfect note to end on, to encourage people that even if they're not doing any of these things, it doesn't mean that they can't take small steps to make changes that eventually get their family to a place where mealtime is a family affair and something that they all enjoy. Madison, where can people find you to learn more about what you do and follow along with learning how to make these healthy meals for their families in a way that works for them?
Yeah, the first thing I want to say is we just mentioned a couple of things, but if there's something, like, every family is so unique and so different. So if there's something in particular that you're like, this is what I'm struggling with, feel free to either send me an email or come check out my Instagram over at Cook at Home Mom. Send me a DM and just say, hey, this is what my issue is. This is what's happening at dinner time. And I would be more than happy to chat through that with you. I find solving problems and like puzzles like that is really fun. And maybe there's something that you could try that would help. Instagram is definitely the place that I'm the most active. Like I said, that's Cook at Home Mom. Our website is cookathomemom.com. You can find all kinds of recipes, whether that's diet specific things, or it's just like weeknight dinner. You want like a taco situation or a type of bowl. We just have tons of recipes over there. And then the other thing that I'm going to be doing is putting together a free 5-day meal plan for your audience. So if you just want to dip your toes into this concept of having meals planned out for your week, this is a great way to take the guesswork out of it. The meal plans are ones that my family follows. I make sure that there's a lot of variety in there, a lot of simple meals. So it's not going to be anything complicated, and like a really good balance between like things you can maybe prep ahead, things that you can make at the 5:30 hour when things are a little bit crazy. I will give you the link for that in the for the show notes. And the last thing that I wanted to share is that I do have a brand new meal prep membership that's coming out. I think it'll be about a month after this episode goes live, and all the details for that will be on Cook at Home Mom. But essentially what it will be is weeknight dinners that are delivered to you, the plans for those, I should say, so that you know exactly what you're going to cook for the week. It takes the guesswork out of it. You're going to be able to provide meals for your family that are easy to make, delicious, satisfying and healthy, and really just take that burden off of your plate. So I'm really excited about that launching. It's going to be called the Balanced Plate Dinner Club. And like I said, I'll have links for you for all of that. But I think that's going to be a really great way for people to just simplify their meal planning experience.
Awesome. Awesome. And yeah, like you said, we'll have the links to Instagram, your website, and this new dinner club in the show notes so people can find you there. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing just all these ways that people can practically make dinner time a more enjoyable experience for the whole family.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Carly.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.